I'm Anne Bozell. Albert Hakim, the man who handled the money for the arms sales to Iran, testified before the Iran-Contra committees today. He said some of the profits from those sales were set aside for Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, although North didn't know it. NPR's Linda Wertheimer has more.
Albert Hakim told the committee that he had come to love Oliver North during the course of what Hakim and his business partner Major General Richard Secord called the enterprise, the arms sales to Iran and arms sales to the Contras in Nicaragua. Hakim worked event that something happened to him. Around the time of North's trip to Iran with Robert McFarland to negotiate for the return of American hostages, Hakim set aside $200,000 for North. Hakim says he does not remember telling North about the fund. He did tell North that he considered him part of the family and that his family would be taken care of. Hakim later tried to find a way to use the interest income from the $200,000 for an education fund for North's daughters, but could find no way to funnel the money to the family. I'm Linda Wertheimer in Washington.
Democratic Representative Mario Biaggi of New York and six other people, including his son, were indicted today on racketeering charges in connection with the WedTech Corporation investigation. The indictment charges that Congressman Biaggi demanded and received 225,000 shares of WedTech stock by threatening to end his law firm's legal representation of the firm before the Small Business Administration. WedTech is a bronze defense contractor under investigation for allegedly bribing as many as 20 public officials. The State Department confirmed today that a U.S. Foreign Service officer has been arrested and charged with fraud. NPR's Ted Clark reports.
A 19-year veteran with the Foreign Service, Bernard J. Fennell, headed the visa unit at the American Embassy in Madrid. According to the indictment, he conspired with Harry Arjad, a naturalized U.S. citizen who solicited money from Iranians in exchange for U.S. visas. Fennell has been recalled from Spain, and he was arrested at the State Department yesterday. At least four Iranians entered the U.S. with the false visas and are now being held by immigration authorities in New York City. They, along with Arjad and Fennell, have been named in the 21-count indictment. Fennell has been placed on administrative leave. His security clearance has been suspended. An administration official told NPR there's nothing to indicate that embassy secrets were compromised as a result of Fennell's actions. This is Ted Clark in Washington.
The Pentagon released the preliminary findings today of the joint U.S.-Iraqi investigation into last month's attack on the USS Stark. Kathleen Delasky reports.
Rear Admiral David Rogers, who headed the investigation, released a memo today that says the U.S. and Iraq cannot agree on an important detail of the incident, that is, the location of the USS Stark at the time of the attack. According to Rogers, the Iraqis say the ship was inside an Iranian-declared war zone, and therefore the pilot assumed it was an Iranian ship. The U.S. Navy maintains that the Stark was 14 miles west of the war zone in international waters. U.S. investigators say they are certain of the location because of a wealth of data from the Stark, two other ships, and AWACS, or early warning radar planes. The preliminary report also revealed that the Stark's commander did attempt to shoot back at the warplane in the few seconds before it was hit. I'm Kathleen Delasky in Washington.
A new poll has found a majority of Americans feel there is a high risk of the U.S. getting into a war in the Persian Gulf. But the poll by the L.A. Times also found that many people don't know where the Persian Gulf is. Fewer than 6 out of 10 knew that it is in the Middle East. On Wall Street today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up more than 42 points to close at 2320.69. This is NPR News in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. This has been a good year for American composer John Harbison. In April, he won a Pulitzer Prize, and last month, his Symphony No. 2 was premiered in San Francisco. These accomplishments and a recent recording of two of his works have prompted these thoughts from our classical music critic Lloyd Schwartz.
This year's well-deserved Pulitzer Prize in music went to John Harbison's darkly radiant The Flight into Egypt, a Christmas cantata whose spiritual message is less about Christmas than the plight of the homeless. This intersection of the spiritual and the realistic is typical of the paradoxes in Harbison's music. He's been called both a radical conservative and a conservative radical, a new romantic, a tune man. I think this means that his music combines sophisticated modern techniques, polyrhythms, tone rows, palindromes, with such current anomalies as melody and harmony. He writes chamber music, symphonies, concertos, song cycles, and even operas. His musical imagery embraces mysticism and ritual, as well as jazz and popular music. Harbison himself plays both classical viola and jazz piano. He actually seems to want to write music that is both beautiful and moving. The two pieces of his on a new Northeastern record were composed 5 years ago, but they demonstrate his continuing fascination with the earthy and the sublime. The Mirabai songs are settings of six poems by the 16th century Indian mystic poet Mirabai. When her husband died, she took to the streets instead of the funeral pyre, singing and dancing her own witty, erotically spiritual poems about Krishna. Listen to the alluring sensuality of the fourth song, Where Did You Go, My Holy One? The superb musicians for John Harbison's Mirabai songs are members of Collage, the group of mostly Boston Symphony players that Harbison co-directs. He's also been composer in residence with the Los Angeles Philharmonic for the past 2 years. The soloist, mezzo-soprano Janice Felty, is one of the six dedicatees of these six songs. She's a dedicated singer, but she lacks Mirabai's volatility, her dancing energy, the sense of ecstatic fun these songs require. You can also hear a good deal of strain in her voice, and too often you can't make out the words. I wish the record had been made with the extraordinary Susan Larson, who sang the premiere of the original and even more exciting version with only piano accompaniment. The unqualified joy of this new Harbison CD are the variations for violin, clarinet, and piano. They seem completely abstract, but they were actually inspired by a sculpture of a Canaanite fertility goddess, dancing like Mirabai. In 15 brief variations, plus finale and epilogue, Harbison mixes his three instruments in every conceivable combination, tempo, and style. There's even a waltz. These variations build a musical arch that reaches an ecstatic climax and then dies away into introspection and elegy. Here's the end of the waltz and the beginning of the haunting 14th variation. Thank you. players on John Harbison's Variations are David Zatz on clarinet, Ursula Oppens piano, and the brilliantly expressive violinist Rosemary Harbison, who isn't on this record only because she happens to be married to the composer.
Lloyd Schwartz reviewed John Harbison Mirabai Song's Variations. Schwartz is classical music editor for the Boston Phoenix. He's a poet and teaches English and creative writing at the University of Massachusetts in Boston. This is Fresh Air.